Hey guys, this is going to be a different episode. Last month we lost Jacques Haitken, best known for his cinematography DP work on so many amazing movies. I don't even know how to even start mentioning all the movies he's been on. As recently as let's see, one of the recent ones are Black Panther, Venom. He worked with Mick a few times on Nightmare on Elm Street, The Hidden. I mean, so many movies. Just look him up. I'm not going to list all of his movies, but anyway, we had him on a show about 2018. He was actually a really great guest. He's one of my favorite guests we've ever had. Of course, we haven't had a lot of guests, honestly, but he was amazing. He and Mick together were just amazing. We reviewed The Hidden together, which, by the way, if you've not seen The Hidden, you have to see The Hidden. Mick and I decided to replay the episode of when Jacques was on our show in 2018. So please enjoy this episode and just know that we lost somebody great who was a great cinematographer, DP. Look at his resume. He has a lot of stuff on his list that will blow your mind, actually. Enjoy the episode. Feel free to leave some comments down below. We don't mind. Really, we don't.
Jacques Haitken. This is Kurt Thomas.
Hi.
And you may not remember me, but I'm Mick Strawn.
I do remember you. You're a very vivid character, a vivid memory in my mind, Mick.
Oh, that's scary. Jacques, I have to tell you, I always loved working with you. You were just an awesome guy.
Thank you very much. A shame more people don't share your perspective.
What? Ouch.
No, and I accept responsibility for that. You know, I know my work is more than good enough, but I'm an eccentric. So my perspective on the world is.
I think what we're going to do is.
We'll talk about The Hidden if you're willing, Mr. Haitken.
Yeah, well, I saw it today, and I must say, there were things about it that were wonderful, but there's too much that bugs me about it. Not the filmmaking. It's strictly a photography issue for me. I struggle with it, and I don't think the print is correct. It's too bright.
New Line Cinema has so many horrible prints out there of their stuff. You know, I mean,
although the Nightmare on Elm Street that's out there now on video on demand is acceptable. It's decent. It represents what I shot. Oh yeah.
Oh good.
Yeah, it's day and night to.
We're gonna do one a month up until the 30th anniversary of four. And that's when I've got a book coming out about Nightmare on Elm Street 4. So
excellent.
You know, I figure I might as well tell all these stories. I've told them to like the same eight people for you know how many years, and it's about time to get it out.
Yeah, before you forget, right?
My kids won't listen to me. My grandchildren won't listen to me. So
something must be wrong with me.
Yes,
then.
Yeah.
So I'll listen to any story.
Exactly. All right.
And by the way, I saw The Hidden for the first time, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I showed it to my girlfriend, who's not even into that genre or anything like that, and she really thought it was a hoot, for real.
That's an interesting thing. You know, I thought about that when I was watching it this time, is that it crosses appeal, because, you know, it's a great buddy cop, buddy film, and it's
sci-fi.
It's humorous as hell. And I also have to say this. For some reason, the clothing and the hairstyles do not bother me as bad as a lot of the 80s films do.
True.
I mean, I don't think that there was as many Bufanti hairdos as there is usually.
Well, you can't be a tough cop with a Bufant hairdo, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Murray was like emperor. He was the emperor detective. I mean,
that guy was on fire, wasn't he?
He was a superhero cop, and he played it. He inhabited that role, and his whole, you know, this is a guy who just lives in the real world 100%, and he is not to be argued with. He's got a wife and kids. He's got a wife and kids that he loves, And he knows what's real and what's not real. And especially, there's a great turning point. See, I'm getting into the narrative because to me, I mean, it's fun and everything, but the strength of that piece is its narrative.
Oh, it is. It's about all these people finding, it's about people that are either finding out who they are or finding out that everything that they know is just a little skewed.
Yes. I thought it was about capitalism. And the communist was arrested at one point.
You know, you're a very weird person.
No, I mean,
you shouldn't talk sometimes.
The creature got into some people's bodies and took whatever he wanted.
Oh, it was
all about American greed. That's the way I saw it.
Well, so you're saying that
maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Yeah, I think you are. Really, I do.
No, I think there's validity to that because all allegories come from the human experience and the human condition.
It's true. Yeah.
So there can be resonance for that.
Oh, so you know what? It never occurred to me is we do have the total id out there, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, like going down the road, pumping on the steering wheel, listening to metal rock in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the id all the way out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I mean, all the cars they were using were cars that were really wanted back then. I don't know if they really are now, but they were back then.
It's true. No, it's really true. And I have, after we get done with the review, we're going to talk about Ferraris. You know?
Okay.
Well, what I was saying was, getting back to my point of why the film sustains, is you have this personal journey of this main character who, in the beginning, is so diametrically opposed to accepting this situation. And step by step, the narrative takes him all the way from the music store where he sees him. He arrives at a crime scene, and here's this guy. He just told the guy you're searching for is dead and in the hospital. So he says, no, now I'm looking for this guy. So he disappears. Then he goes to a crime scene. There's this guy already at the crime scene. He pulls him outside, says, what the hell do you think you're doing here? And, you know, that's why it's great to see it for the second time, to watch Kyle MacLachlan's performance, because a lot of times, you know, people didn't realize that Kyle was part of it. You know, they
right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, his whole character is so flat, you know?
Right. And even when he tells him things that don't make sense at all, Nuri's just listening, but of course he's not buying it. And so inch by inch, like after they get to the Ferrari dealership, for example, he's already had a bunch of Lloyd telling him things that surprisingly, as screwy as he said when he first heard it, right. are coming true. So when
true.
His boys say they stole a red Ferrari, immediately Lloyd says, he took it.
Yeah, that's right. He took it.
Fuck you. How the fuck do you know? And then Mike Nuri says, put an APB on the red Ferrari. So that's one little clue that, you know, it's not like he's saying, I believe you, but, you know, his hunches are starting to change. And there's a bunch of little turning points like that take you all the way up to that rooftop where he watches the conversation between the two of them, where the monster's inside Claudia Christian and says...
I'm not coming
out. I'm not coming out, right?
I'm not coming out.
I'm not coming out.
I know. And so he's watching all this, and then he's on board. But that's, you know, it's a 75 minutes to that point ride.
But not for one moment do I ever want to look at my watch or any of that. And by the way, whoever the DP was, the lighting of the police station was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hate it. In other words, if I were to do that today, I would do such a different.
What would you? Because really,
very dated and hey, is this going on the record?
It's hey, Jacques. This is going on your permanent record.
No, there are a lot of scenes that are lovely. There are a lot of scenes that are lovely, but they're not as lovely as they could be because they're how they're printed. They're way bright. It's the right expression. You know what I mean by printing? The grading, the lightness.
Oh, yeah, the grading. Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Scenes are lit in such a way where you could actually crush them quite a bit and still see plenty of detail, and there's enough highlights to hold the frame together. And it would be much spookier, moodier, and classier. A lot more expression and resonance to
them. But
very flocky look, very cheap look.
I know that's you know your point of view, and it's good because you wanted the whole thing to be darker and more squashed. But the police station to me was great because I went to about three of them. And I had been in police stations before. They are so far the other way as far as being bright. You know, they're the antithesis of everything that you're thinking of. They are, you know, usually just, you know, as many of those 8-foot fluorescent panels, the fluorescent tubes as you can get. We kind of built that based on photos right off of the Rampart police station, and you dimmed it down a great deal from that, and you know, because you were all Kino flows on the ceiling, right? And
or fixtures, I might have used just for budget's sake. A lot of them were just because I didn't need to dim them or anything like that.
So. Okay, I still thought it looked really good. It's funny that you said that. You know, looking back on it, you know, things that you don't right. like.
Yeah, well, I would have used on some of the wide shots. I would have put graduated filters to shade, to mold the shape of the light. It's very flat lighting there. The walls were painted a reasonable color to handle that kind of spill, but.
That's all you, right, Mick?
We painted them.
It's too flat. It wasn't. There needed to be more expression. You know, it was a fun scene in that room when it's a scene. It's done in the daytime, but the lights are then turned down and the sunlight coming into the room when he interrogates Lloyd.
Right.
Brings him up.
Right. It was very good. It was very good.
That was better. That was better. But I don't
know. I just have to say that. It looks so much better than a lot, especially a lot of the low budget, or you know.
Oh yeah, better than the cop films that were out at
that
time.
Cop films of that period, no. And the stuff at night, you know, I remember that you used an Agfa film, for the night scenes, working with that different film latitude so that your blacks didn't quite go completely black.
Correct.
So that when you're doing that chase scene. You can see a lot of detail around, and
that's the norm.
Yeah, that's the norm, right? Yeah, I remember it was the first time that we actually had a truck running in front of that. I had hired a truck to run in front of everybody and do wet downs, and I remember that. One thing that Jock said was, you know what, if you do one wet down and we start this thing, you're going to have to let
down all
everything.
Time.
You're going to have to make sets.
Right.
Yeah, consistent. He was right. Yeah. I really hated it. After a while, I didn't even want to do it anymore, and I was stuck.
Yeah.
Well, but it definitely enhances a film like that. So,
but the stuff on the roof, amazing.
Yeah, you know, that was location, too.
That was just a great location. That, you know.
But to shoot it on location, have to get lights up to be higher than a 6-story building back then on low budget movies. It was a big deal having people. Now it's nothing.
Right. And I remember that you had me build all those, what do they call them? Skylights so that we could get lights in there so that we didn't have.
Yeah, that was too much. Boy, talk about insecurity.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm just killing myself.
Wow. I thought that was it looked good overall and
yeah, no, it definitely was too precious. Is my beef. It wasn't edgy enough.
Well, you know.
You know, it's the age.
It was different. It was a great-looking film despite what you think.
Right.
Despite yourself, you did a great job.
Yeah.
Well, you guys were young lads.
We were. We were.
And you were just getting started, right?
We were young and obnoxious.
Yeah. You're younger than me, Mick, so.
Yeah, I am. I am.
I wasn't so young. I should have known better.
You're about 6. You're about 6 years older than I am, aren't you?
I'm going to be 68, yes.
68, yeah. Yeah, see? See, he's an old guy.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. When I was 62, I could still hand. I was on Captain Phillips for 2 months on a Navy ship.
That's what we saw.
Hand holding. Yeah. I can't even lift a camera. I'm still shooting, though. I'm still shooting.
Well, you don't need to at this point, right?
No. I love it. It's funny. Lately, after my wife passed, I was out of the business for a while. I got into second unit work, and I was DPing and shooting, but, you know, people really liked my long lens work. So now I work for, people bring me on to just do long lens and also remote camera systems. I'm very good on the wheels.
These oh, are you? Guys, yeah.
Yeah. These younger guys are not as adept. They're good with joysticks, which I am not good at. I operate a camera with joysticks. But so I'm still working is my point.
As well you should be.
Mostly I work with my brain.
I'm working on some of my faves, by the way.
Great. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So let's go back to the hidden. We went through, I thought that the gunfight in the,
The gunfights were great.
The gunfight all of them were good. In the masquer, in the, mannequin.
Yes.
Factory.
Yes.
Oh man. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. That looked so good. And all through it, the one thing that I really like about it is how many times Michael Nuri hits Claudia with a bullet, and you can see it in his face. Every time it happens, he's thinking, what is going on? Why can I not kill this girl, this woman? And all the time, the mannequins are exploding all over the place. And we get upstairs, and then she does that fall. It is really altogether very. It has a masterful look.
Oh, she fell through the sign. Oh, that was beautiful.
And you see, they didn't fall. They didn't want to fall through the neon. It wasn't recommended anywhere, and so we sewed little bags. And put the neon was all in little packets that we sewed out of window screen, and what they were made so that when she went through it, like one would break and go one way, okay. And the other would break and go in the other, so none of it went down with her.
Right.
So it all stayed up in the air. And I remember coming around the corner after she after she went down in the bag. The stunt person and lands in the bag, and I'm sniffing around down there looking for any glass that went with her. Going, yay, hooray! Nothing came down.
Yeah, you bet. That's a big deal. I mean, physical effects and stunts. You know, that's a big responsibility when you do a gag like
that.
Oh
yeah, it was. So,
kudos to you for keeping them safe and getting us a great shot. Because that's what it's all about, is doing it safe.
And I might add that my mother actually won the pool. That was the only night that she ever came out to see something filmed that we had done. And she drove out from San Bernardino, and she watched us film that night, and she won the pool for when we were gonna break the neon. And she won $57 that night.
Nice.
Nice.
So, Claudia Christian.
Yeah, that was a tough night for me to shoot on location and get all shit done.
That went a long time.
And we had that set piece. We remember him hanging from the thing with the cops coming. That beautiful rakish shot was your
that
set piece.
That was beautiful, though.
And I'm right on the, I was right on the frame. I used every scrap of set you gave
me. Well, and I might add that, you know, that rooftop, do you remember we had to move that thing twice? That we had it up there on the rooftop, and we were trying to do all this in one night. And we did. We managed to get through that thing all the way up to the fall in a night, you know. Yeah. And that set piece kept being in the way no matter where we would put it.
No.
We're moving it all over the place up there. And I was like, this is getting really old. Because it was enormous.
That's terrible. I know it's 30 years later, 31 years later, but no. I'm sorry.
You have nothing to apologize for. You know what? I figure it this way. If we both get out of these things with our psyches intact, we're doing pretty damn good. You know?
Yeah. We were superheroes, because when you look at the budgets of these films,
oh yeah,
and you see what's on the screen today, that's the lunch budget of a median sized film. Yeah. You know,
but then it's all at the same time. You know, the effects budgets are, you know, you can do a lot with almost nothing now, and you don't have to develop your film anymore and all the rest of that. So we have these amazing young Turks coming up with just some amazing other films. Like, I don't know if you've seen a film. What's the one with the cardboard? Dave Makes a Maze.
Oh yeah.
Amazing. Just absolutely great. Amazing thing to see.
Definitely low budget too.
Yeah, definitely low budget. You know, so there are other young Turks that are following in our footsteps, even if they don't know it.
It's called Dave Makes a Maze.
Yes, it's amazing.
It's an amazing film. You have to see. I think it's on
Hulu. I think
Hulu. Yeah, it's on Hulu. If you get a chance, you have to check it out. It is
It's only on Hulu.
Yeah, only on Hulu. It is a little tour de force, but I always loved Claudia Christensen in that role. I mean, you know, to me, she really did such a great job as the zoned out stripper.
Oh, it was a great performance. I thought that was better than Strays.
You know how they were, you know how that, yeah, no, exactly. Thank you for mentioning that. Do you know how the actors that played the monster, that played the antagonist, they rehearsed as a group?
Did they?
Oh, wow.
Always.
Is that why they always had to?
Yeah.
Because they did all get the exact same expression.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the second guy was amazing, though. I love that guy.
Yeah, the guy.
Oh, he was great. It was like my dad gone crazy. That's what I was like, this he's awesome.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, Mr. Miller, I think.
Yeah, no, so they all went together, and they carved out that, you know, they found the truth of that. Because at any given moment, when you point your camera at that character, he's standing around and looking at it. And if we're going to identify with him, it's got to be like he landed on, you know,
right,
Mars.
Exactly. You know, there's a couple of times where you keep finding, you know, the obsession through there of these characters with a mirror. Was amazing, yeah. And really an interesting theme that ran through it.
Right.
All of them looking in,
and it's all about what is human,
and the shots in the mirror.
How about the dog?
The dog was great.
In the mirror.
The dog was great.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, because I need to tell a couple stories. I had to tell a story about that dog. That probably was not my department's finest moment. But in the meantime, we do always rate these films on a 5-something scale. And I am going to rate The Hidden at a 4.2 zoned out strippers.
I would give it a 4.5. Even higher, yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Because I had one question.
Okay.
When the guy is a flamethrower and he's attacking the senator with the flamethrower,
right?
Why'd the cops just stand there and watch him? That was one question I had. I mean, they would keep shooting, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
But you know, so I'm gonna give it a couple points off for that. So I'm around 4.5.
You know,
so,
I'm not gonna defend that one.
Yeah,
I agree with it entirely. That probably could have been improved with editing.
Jacques, between 1 and 5, what do you think?
That's a tough one. It's a good thing my girlfriend was watching with me, because she was very concerned. She didn't want to be scared and grossed out and anything. And it just, the movie tickled the hell out of her.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah, she just loved it and thought it was funny and a hoot and all that. So I don't want to be too hard on it. Yeah, no, I'll go with 4.2.
Okay.
Can live with
that's a good one.
I don't know about 4.5.
Well, I just really enjoyed it. I guess I was the first time I had seen it too, so I was all in.
Yeah. So
you guys come from a different point of view.
We worked on it. So it's hard. I'm going to tell a story about this.
You're looking in the mirror. You guys are both looking in the mirror.
Is that what I'm doing?
That's right.
Well, so the dog, when we were on the location, we were shooting the dog, that we couldn't get the dog to do what we wanted, right?
Yeah.
And so we went back later on to the same location because the dog had been trained at that location forever. I mean, you know, the thing is if you see a little gag like the dog coming through the slats, that took a lot of training, trust me. I mean,
that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. It really is. It takes a long time. And so we go back to the location. We set cameras up for a kind of other unit, right? Not second unit, but I mean, this is after the film was done. And we sat there with the dog on a board. You know, the door, we had made this little platform for the dog to do a little run up and everything like that. And we have all these fake, you know, doors set up. And so we sit there and we sit there and we sit there and we hear the clicking of the things, same things that were on sprays, those little click, click, click things, which I really hate. And they're whistling at the dog and they're trying, and they do this for 4 hours. I mean, the thing is I was about ready to jump through it because they were getting to the point to where they had trained me that, you know, if I jumped through that thing, maybe these guys had shut up and my life would get better. You know, I mean, come on, really. At some point, that's what it all becomes, right?
Right.
And Dave Cannon is sitting across from me and he goes like this. He goes, look over there. And I turn around, I look back, and the dog's through the door. And everybody's going, yay, it's amazing, we got it, the dog went through the door. And I'm looking back at him, you son of a bitch, you threw the dog through the door. And he goes, yeah, I know, can we go home now?
Yeah, wow.
He did, he threw the dog through the door.
Well, it worked.
Cats, yeah, ask.
No, it was a breakaway. There was probably emotional duress.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the things the cats did to us.
He shouldn't have become a show dog.
Really? That's what you get for being a dog in show business, right? Yeah, there you go. So, ask Jacques about cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must have been fun.
What has two legs and sleeps with cats?
What?
Mrs. Cats.
Oh, my gosh.
Ba-da-boo.
There you go. Just to touch on some of the other wonderful work that you've done, we'll cover it with me. You and I work with 30 cats.
On Strays.
Wait a minute. Are you kidding me? You were on Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Yeah, no, I did some splinter work for them. That's all.
Really? So did I. Huh. That's scary. I was a construction coordinator.
That's how I met Mark, what was his name? The director.
Not Fisher.
No.
So he worked with me on Cats.
Right.
He worked with me, evidently, on
Breaking 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, by the way, was that same room used in Elm Street 1? The one that rotates?
Oh, of course.
I was curious about that.
Of course.
Oh, that's right.
Where you worked. That's probably where we first met each other, was the revolving room.
Oh, that's right. The room. Yes,
because the room was room. Then used for Breaking. It came directly from Nightmare on Elm Street and was turned around and used for Electric Boogaloo.
That was a clever gag.
That was.
You know, that thing was hand-driven.
Yeah, no, I know. Absolutely. It was that well balanced.
Wow.
I mean, it took them a while to balance it, but boy, when they did.
It was a clever deal, though. I mean, it had huge mass and entropy, but it was balanced so that if you pushed on it, it would move.
Yeah, it was.
Was it like bearings?
Yes, bearings and weighted and all kinds of things. You would know better.
Yeah, somebody had set had actually
Jim Doyle
to give you Jim Doyle to give you an idea of how a huge piece of mass could be moved that easily is it was balanced and balanced and balanced, and somebody had left a piece of L metal attached, hadn't cut it off when they welded and were finishing the room on the inside and supporting it, and they did a test of the room, and the L metal bracket went up and hit the grid, and I am telling you, the sound of that hitting the grid was, because the
so
thing
much
is
mass.
Even though
so much.
Oh, with so much mass behind that piece, you know, it shuddered to a stop, and that grid just, it moaned. I literally thought the world was coming down
on
my
head. It's like a ship.
Yeah, it is. It's like pushing a ship on the water, man. It was amazing.
This wacky stuff. You know, that's what I was thinking about. Back then we did a lot of in-camera work.
The thing is there was a process of you would do as much in work as you possibly could because the opticals were expensive,
right? Yeah.
So you would spend a lot of effort,
and they were limited.
And you were limited to what you could do.
They didn't look right. They were doopy and everything.
Exactly. So what you would do is you would spend a great deal of time and money figuring your shots in a line so that you could do them practically. And that's what's different nowadays is that it is easier in every possible way to just do the optical shots, and it doesn't quite take as much kind of processing and thought.
Right.
I mean, unless you get into the really complicated ones, but the thing is, you're using those shots all the way along, and they don't kind of have as real a feel, which kind of gives you that, you know, what I've talked to before about the Frank Miller actually does a lot of real stuff, and then brings it together with the CGI, and it really has.
That's what my argument with the older films that hold up longer, because I think that people are kind of getting worn out with all this CGI.
You see, that's just because we were better people.
You worked harder, right? You were harder workers.
No, we were better people. I mean, better people overall.
I mean, isn't that what it comes down to?
It does. Well, that's what I think. Jock's a better person by far
than any 30-year-old.
Yeah, that's right. You pieces of.
So, what is it like working around a lot of 20 and 30-year-olds?
I love it. I'm finally fitting in.
Oh, are you? You get in there, huh?
Yeah, no. I have always been. You know, now that I'm in my late 60s, I'm enjoying the benefit of the ancillary benefit of my immaturity.
Right. Exactly. The rest of the story.
Yeah, people think it's cute, whereas before they thought I was nuts. But I've always been in touch with my inner child, for sure.
Oh, Jock, there's one thing that I wanted to make sure and do during this interview is I wanted to apologize for throwing you in the pool.
Did you throw me in the pool?
I did. I threw you in the pool at the brat party for what's the one that we were up in Santa
Cruz? And I didn't take it well.
You didn't take it well. You didn't.
You know something? I'm going to apologize to you because I was being a jerk for not going along with it.
you actually
I've changed
you practically then. Scared me. I thought well, here it is, this is the rap party, everything, and
well,
I,
you know,
I
what
thought,
yeah, you know, the thing is, I've had some psychological issues that I still have, but I've learned to embrace them and see them as a gift now. So back at that time I was very overly shy and not, you know, and you know, I needed sort of an organized world. Now I've learned to embrace my perspective on things. To me, I look at the world as I live in a world of normals. their way of doing things, even though I don't agree with it. Right. It's the way things are. And the sooner I learn to conform and cooperate and appear to be normal,
the
easier it's going to go in my life. And since I've done that, I've really learned to love the normals. They're my favorite people.
Well, I wouldn't exactly ever call myself normal.
Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
I was a piece of chaos that just kind of like formed its own fractal logic and went down the road.
Yeah, well, all kidding aside, I think a lot of it has to do with being, you know, always solution oriented, which you were, man.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, that's right. Things are crazy and hairy, but. And I sometimes took the world too seriously, but one thing I didn't do was, you know, not embrace, you know, pursuing a solution, that the higher purpose was always.
Oh, yeah. We always worked it out.
To do our jobs. And, you know, the mission was always the higher purpose. And any personal issues that I had, no matter what weirdness, you know, my personality was putting off. I would always.
Oh, we got along famously. Yeah. I remember when you used to drive an old Ford.
Yeah.
Oh, a Galaxy.
It was in the film. It was in the film, the Galaxy, in the fucking
right?
scene that oh. baby blue with the oh, white convertible.
Yeah. Right.
That was
right.
parked
right.
next to the.
Wow. Yeah. That was his car. His car was a thing of beauty.
Oh my
and
God!
I had a Mercedes at the time, and then later on, I had a 54. Sort of like a station wagon, kind of big beast, and I drove up, and I remember this distinctly. He drove up in a Lexus, right?
Yeah.
And I got out of the car, and I was like, Jacques,
where's the Ford?
Hell is wrong with you, man? Where's your Ford? You know, I felt betrayed. I felt like all of life was going to have to change because Jacques Aitken. Was driving a Lexus, and he goes, Mick, it's like a Cadillac, except for it's really well made and it's inexpensive and it's really cool. And I remember, and I said at the time, I said distinctly, but it's a Japanese car. Right, right. Wow, things changed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I followed the development of the Lexus through the late 80s, and it was released. Its first year was 1990, and I was there to buy the first runs rolling off the assembly line because I loved cars. And to me, what the Japanese, and particularly what Lexus was doing, they were the first high-end brand, and Toyota had the money and the technological. That was a very cool car for me at that time.
It was. Wow, but what a switch.
I know, exactly. What a betrayal. What a betrayal.
Yeah, what a betrayal. Yeah, I was mortified. I was like, oh,
I don't,
gosh.
Yeah. I don't blame you. Well, Dad, you got to see a new side of me. I realize now, my whole life, I was actually born way too early.
Yeah.
Way too early. I mean, all the stuff that's coming, I'm tapping my foot with AI. You know, it's just not soon enough. There's no flying cars. We didn't even get to the moon. Yes. Nothing's happening here.
You wanted to be coming of age to start your DP work about now, right?
Yeah, well, I figured 2001.
Oh, yeah, there you
be
go.
Be up in space and space station. Yeah. But okay, 2010. Here we are, 2019, from Blade Runner. And look at us. The only thing we have are these cell phones are pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that's true. But we have Donald Trump.
Yeah, well.
Sorry about that. Oh, well. Anyway.
moving on.
Well, hey, Jacques, I don't want to keep you any longer.
Well, I do want him to talk about like some things that are currently going on with him.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I got to know.
I
got to
know. Because
I just got done watching Black Panther, and the Korea stuff was amazing.
Yeah, I was on Black Panther. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to us about what you're doing now.
Well, that wasn't my last. I was on Venom. Do you know what Venom is?
Oh, Venom. Okay.
Oh.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, that's a Sony Marvel with Tom Hardy. It's a spinoff. The spinoff of Spider-Man, Venom and Carnage. Yeah, if you know the comic books.
Did they try and do that a long time ago?
I don't know whether they did it as a movie. This is a, you know, a whole big, you know, Magilla movie. So
yeah.
But I also was on the career unit. I was camera operator on that. I wasn't the DP of that action unit, camera operator. I did some splinter work on that. That's why the unit that picks me up every now and then to operate. I mean, I do DP, but it's nice to get picked up to operate because it's very easy job. None of the pressure.
Yes.
Of course, money is much less too, but that was fun to go to Korea. It was cold working at night, but...
great. So you're working on Venom, and you got anything else coming up?
No, I don't really. I'm trying to start a new career.
What is your new career?
A screenwriter and producer.
Oh my gosh.
I figure I'm trying to make it by the time I'm 72. I know that's tough, but
there you go.
I don't have much more time.
Well, if you need somebody to get out there and give you any advertising at all, we will be there for you.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you know what? I would love it if we could do this again, maybe in 6 months or so, if you're willing.
Yeah, sure.
We'll talk about some
filmmaking is my passion. Do you realize I'm coming up? I shot my first film when I was in college for money, because I had bought a Bolex in high school. So I was shooting 68. I was doing industrials.
Oh my gosh!
So this year is my 50th anniversary as a professional cinematographer. And I still haven't lost my youthful passion for storytelling and shooting. And so, yeah, I'm always up for talking about it and getting involved in it. You know, I still have that fire in the belly to do it. And the writing part is still fun. I mean, you know, I realize after all this time, the reason why I don't do many commercials at all is narrative is really my interest. I like being a photographer, a director of photography, to portray stories and characters, because it's almost like three-dimensional chess. It's very different than just photography. Looking at a narrative in a script and staging events and then creating a long through line, you know, following story through lines and using motifs and all this stuff. It's such a complex canvas. It's incredible. It's a very beautiful place to work. It's very stimulating for the mind, the creative, the intuition. What a gift to be able to work as a filmmaker. What a great art. We were gifted with this, really. We're so lucky to do this kind of work.
I will totally agree with you, and I want to say that, you know, it's been a pleasure working with you and talking to you again, and we're going to make it happen again.
Yeah, that's fine. We can watch another movie and comment.
Oh, on yeah.
Yes. I'm very opinionated. Although
you're opinionated?
I'll tell you, I'm much softer in my old age, but not towards my own work.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think it's great that you're willing to do that with your own work, especially.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. No.
Well, I call a spade a spade. You know, look, I was worried about Nightmare on Elm Street, and I was involved in one of the remasterings that I thought was a decent remaster. This remaster doesn't quite look like the one. It's very similar. But this looks like they went and got better technology than the HD Master I worked on, which had to be at the maybe 20, maybe less, maybe 15 years after. So I'm glad. That transfer was great. The hidden, disappointed. I don't think the expression was not what I would have intended. You got scenes where there needs to be much more mood, and it's lit well enough. If it would just be printed properly, it would look so much cooler and not dark. Mick, you know, the irritating dark. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Plus, in video, you can lift shadows, so you'd see plenty, but the tone of it would be different.
You know what? I will try looking at it with some sunglasses on.
There you go.
But some of the scenes are printed correctly, so you'll have to take them on and off.
Well, I'll take them off of those scenes, naturally. You know what?
You're making fun of me.
I am making fun of you, but you know what? You can take it.
Yeah.
You are a great guy. You are really...
I'm gullible, but yeah, no, I'm certainly a lot better guy than when you threw me in the water. But I wanted to make sure... that I apologized for you. I'm glad you reminded me. It's not a big event in my life, but now that you mention it, I think back and I go, what a prude. What a what a jerk.
I was actually afraid for you getting out of the water. I was afraid that something was going to happen.
I was shocked by it. I think
so. I fear so that. Great talking to you, and it's going to happen again. Okay. Yes,
thank you very much.
All right, guys. Have a great time in the world.
Okay, man. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.